Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Today on Life Quest, I'm talking with Beth Slevkoff. She's a spiritual director, a retreat leader. She's a mom and an author. And the book I'm talking with her about today is called Broken Hallelujahs, Learning to Grieve the Big and Small Losses of Life. Beth, welcome to LifeQuest.
Oh, thanks so much.
I usually begin this program by asking the author, why did you write this book at this time? But as I have read your book, I realize any time is the right time because we all have losses which we don't recognize the impact of right from the very beginning of our life, don't we?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
You reference right at the beginning, kind of Eden, remembering Eden, which define what that means for our listeners.
Well, for me, I grew up in a very idyllic home and neighborhood and community, and everything was as it should be. And so that was my understanding of Eden, where we feel safe and at home and familiar and at one with the people around us, and that was actually my lived experience. So unlike I think most people, I grew up in that beautiful environment.
Yeah, and some of us who are a little older remember riding our bicycles all over without fear and only coming home because we got hungry.
Oh yeah, when the street lights came on,
yes.
That's when I had to be home, and right.
And yet, straight away in your book, Broken Hallelujahs, you say innocence, we start to lose it, don't we?
Yeah, that was such an awakening for me, both realizing that the exterior world was more broken than I was aware of, and when various people let me down and I was hurt by different things or woke up to different kind of crises and traumas. That was shocking for me, and then recognizing that, lo and behold, my own heart and my own mind also hold this duality of goodness and brokenness, of perfection and really messed up, wounded, hurtful parts of me too.
Some adults would look back and see some of the things that happen in childhood as not being important. But they really are. I remember talking to an author a few years ago about a book called When Children Grieve, and we grieve straight away, don't we?
Oh, I think so. I think, as a mom, I grieved once my child was born, and there's a separation going on. But I think there's that experience of, as children, too, it's a continuous kind of loss and separation is the world, part of our human experience from the get-go.
You grew up as a preacher's daughter, preacher's home, as did I, and the church was so meaningful to you, and it seemed to be a wonderful, good place. But sometimes that isn't always the way it is with our faith communities, and that causes us to grieve a loss of hope.
Yeah, my experience wasn't the footloose red pants daughter of a pastor. It was a wonderful home, but. But again, it sort of kept me from being able to figure out how to deal. I really didn't have any computer systems internally to deal with the brokenness and the loss and that was, to come. And I would say that not the best theological systems and understandings to hold the loss. And that was quite problematic as experience unfolded.
You say we are all homeless in one way or another at one time or another. How do you mean?
I think of, it goes back to that concept of Eden and that place of dwelling within our own skin, dwelling with an understanding of God's love and God's presence, having a sense of being at home, being known, being valued, being cherished, being familiar. And there's displacement, that happens in so many ways. Our bodies fail us. We lose people we love. We're forced out of these lands of familiarity and comfort, and and home. And it could be, you know, actually, you know, I'm going away for school, and here I've chosen this wonderful thing, and I've worked hard to get into it. But all of a sudden, there's this unexpected sense of loss and all the familiarity. That was a really tough one for me. Or the journey after people leave college, yeah. Or the journey as people choose to be married, and all these things that are labeled very good and things we want also come with often a great deal of loss of the things we are leaving behind that often go unnamed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think kind of reside then as toxins in our body when we're not able to name and acknowledge and open up to God and to God's spirit, the places that are hurting in us.
As you mentioned college and things like that, sometimes college isn't everything we thought it would be, especially if you're in a dormitory situation or something like that. But at the same time, when we leave college in that environment, we begin to miss it because our life was fairly structured. You know, we knew what we're going to do in the morning and what we had to do before class started again. And now, whatever job we go into, in my case, I was going to pastor, and I had all kinds of ideals. Not so much. All of a sudden, life moves in directions we never expected.
Right, right. And that, I think there's a very common season. There's a few different seasons where people often drop into a kind of depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we culturally name it. Or talk about it much, and I think that season after college, when, like, exactly for the reasons you said, you understand what's going on, you know your schedule, you know how to be in your world, and all of a sudden all that's taken away, and we're supposed to be happy, you know, but that's extremely hard on our system. we're just kind of lost for a while, and that can happen, you know, in marriage after you say your wedding vows or when you have, you know, when you have children or all sorts of different situations, and we feel lost, and then we feel like, uh-oh, I'm not supposed to feel
right. This
way. And so it goes hidden and it goes underground. And then it often, I think, manifests in a deeper kind of depression or addictions or the
mm-hmm.
the culturally acceptable addictions like, you know, Netflix or
yes.
or whatever it is that we use as a numbing mechanism instead of a brief retreat, which I think they can be used very well as brief vacations from or retreats from. But if we never return from those retreats of television or social media into the actualities of our life, then they become numbing mechanisms or addictions.
You say here something which I think is so important. I thought marriage was something that would make my life easier. Boy, we know different, don't we?
Yeah, and I purposely wanted to write, this will sound a little bit snarky maybe, but I wanted to write an anti-Christian marriage book chapter.
Okay. Yeah, I gotcha.
Okay, do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
And okay, so a lot of the books and the cute Christian couples at summer camps and the people teaching me about marriage, most of whom are no longer together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not funny, but you know,
it's
sad.
It's real.
But true. They weren't helpful in leading me into the realities of the journey of lifelong partnership. And I say this, you know, loving my husband and thinking he's a good man and believing that God was part of this partnership, that we both a choice of it and the continued working and presence in it. So, yeah, but I think marriage is the greatest means of spiritual formation, certainly in my life, you know, where I no longer get to be the center of my universe, and I hate that.
Yeah. Well, also, you sort of allude to the fact at one point in your book where we glibly say things about richer or poorer, sickness and in health, till death do us part. And yet, reality of a sinful world and life makes a difference because sickness does come. Job loss does happen. And then all of a sudden, what kind of tools do we need to cope with that reality?
Right. Yeah. And it comes in all sorts of different ways. And should be expected, probably not come as such a shock. And I think that's part of my being growing up in Eden is everything came as such a shock. I
yes.
didn't I didn't have the coping mechanisms.
Or the understanding, or the belief that, well, of course these things happen in this world, but they're always happening to someone else.
Yeah.
As Christians, yeah. We think
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Versus that, you know, suffering should be expected, and Jesus is deeply present in that suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this container, if you will, of God's foundation underneath us and Jesus's presence with us and the Holy Spirit within us that allows us to deal and to open up and even welcome these places of fear and confusion and despair and darkness within us, and to notice when they're in us and open them up, trusting that the Holy Spirit is there saying, you know, your heart is saying something, you need to listen to this. Your body is saying something, you need to listen to this, and let me move it someplace. Let me tend to it. Let me transform it. And that I always go back to that, both in my work as a spiritual director,
mm-hmm.
and then just my personal life, is that idea that my job is to stay as honest and present in the realities of my life as they're unfolding, to myself and to God. And often that needs another person to help me do that.
Mm-hmm.
Be it a counselor or a 12-step group or a friend or whoever it is, to help me stay honest and open, particularly when parts of the journey are bringing a lot of dark emotions and confusion. And then it's God's job to do God's work in that and to tend and to heal and to rest and to restore, to convict, to resurrect. That's what God does. And kind of to realize my job is to be patient and wait, but to be actively opening what I find that is hurting me at the time to God.
I'm guessing that most of the listeners to the 75 programs this will be aired on are Christians or believers in some form, but our picture of God affects how we deal with all these things, doesn't it? Because you say sometimes we have the idea that if I do certain things, God will reward me in certain ways. And when that doesn't happen, then we get a little unhappy with ourselves and probably with God, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as Christians, in some ways, it's loss and is a bit trickier in that if we believe that God is very intimate and that God has protects us and provides for us in certain ways,
mm-hmm.
and then that doesn't happen.
Yes.
Then we drop into this crisis of faith, right? And now the person or the being that can help us, we feel has left the building,
yeah.
and so there's that sense of abandonment, that sense of oh my gosh, and you know, and that was part of my journey with losing my brother, and
mm-hmm.
in much of the book, as you know, is about this. My brother having brain cancer, and during the 5 years that he was living with that, also coincided with my husband and I losing a business
mm-hmm.
and two young children, and that became a season of scarcity that really surprised me. I had believed, you know, being a Christian, kind of from the cradle,
right,
that when we seek God, God will be found. Not that it will always be easy, but there will be a sense of what to do, a sense of some abundance underneath the realities of life. And I did not experience that for some long years. I just experienced scarcity of physical, emotional, financial, spiritual, and really, really felt like God had, you know, to quote C.S. Lewis, I'll misquote C.S. Lewis, but had... shut the door and double bolted. I could hear the sound
yes.
of double bolting behind.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, why on earth in this time of greatest need am I not hearing from you, God? Why are you seem to be absent from me? Particularly because ever since I was a child, I have felt a sense of God's presence, particularly in nature, in ways, in very loving ways with me. So that was all really confusing. And,
sure.
And hard to navigate. God, where are you?
In part two of you titled that section, Listening to Our Losses, and you suggest right away that during these times, we actually need to learn to grieve the loss, or at least the potential loss of what we're experiencing as we go through grief. But how do we listen to grieve and learn?
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, the Psalms were extremely helpful marching orders.
Okay.
Particularly the laments on what to do when I feel like God has left the building, or when life is really out of control, when the chair has been pulled out from under me. Because the laments really are, you know, the chair has been pulled out from under the people of Israel, and they are falling. Mm-hmm. And the God they thought God was, the provider, the protector, is not providing and protecting the way they believed God would. And they, you know, were the people of God, and yet they're being left alone in their feelings, in their sense, in their experience. And so those laments say, keep facing God, and pour out the raw emotions, pour out what's in your heart, pour it out. So name it, acknowledge it. And then there's a waiting until God either changes our hearts or changes the external situations, or is doing something in both. And then the end of those laments are often the people crying out in gratitude and having that real sense of hope that God has not left us. God is greater than we believed God was. We are greater than we believed we are. So, but so many different ways, I think, to acknowledge what is hurting us, and open that up. And one of the things I can't overemphasize is the importance of traveling companions, of finding a human being or community. And I say this as an introverted person who never spoke about anything to anyone until I was, I think, in training for spiritual direction myself in my about 30. So this is something I have learned, but I won't move a step further in this journey of life without having people that can hold my hands on the downhills.
Sometimes it seems as if we have to borrow someone else's faith for a while, and piggyback on their faith in order to get us past this sense of where are you, God?
And I think that is a greater understanding of community, a truer understanding of Christian community, that it's everything is not up to me as an individual to hold faith and hope and trust at every moment of my journey. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very American understanding of our faith journeys. And so I'm so grateful when that understanding kind of opened up in this realization. And you're taking it from the paraplegic in Scripture is helpful for me, that the person on the stretcher, there's no mention of him having any faith, but the friends are the people that carried him to Jesus. And that was that was enough. And so sometimes that's definitely me. I'm the paraplegic. And don't have faith, or don't have trust because my trust has been broken by some experience, or don't have hope anymore. Those things aren't things I can just conjure up or wish and, you know, it'll happen, or that kind of thing. And so I stand in church with people next to me that are saying the prayers when I'm not able to, until they form in my spirit again and I can say them again. And I think that's a beautiful way that God provides us to move through this world.
And when our hallelujahs seem broken, then all of a sudden we find them again. Whatever our faith traditions are, we all believe in the writings of C.S. Lewis. And I remember that once he said something to the effect of that he particularly loathed hymns, but that if it gave comfort and to the maid who stands by him in the pew, then he shares that comfort too.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Again, if you've just tuned in, I have been talking to Beth Allen Slefkov. She's written a book called Broken Hallelujahs, Learning to Grieve the Big and the Small Losses of Life. Beth, where can our listeners get a copy of your book?
University Press publishes it, and they certainly have it on their website, but Amazon, you can get the print or Kindle or any of the major major booksellers like that.
Beth, I want to thank you for being with us today on LifeQuest.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. This program comes to you from studios in the Meadowglade Church, Battleground, Washington.